Welcome to Opening Presence, the podcast about creative expression, healing, and transformation. My name is Aaron Robinson. Thank you so much for joining me. In today's episode, I sit down with Will Hardy, the founder of Suansati, which in Thai translates to the Garden of Mindfulness. It's the set and setting of where I completed my 200-hour yoga teacher training in beautiful Chiang Mai, Thailand. In this conversation, we delve into Will's journey into meditation, how he manifested his dream life, and the beauty of becoming a father. If you enjoy this episode, make sure to share it with a friend. Now, without further ado, welcome to Opening Presence. Well, it's been quite the hiatus for me in this podcast. I guess coming back in a major, major way, who knew that I would be here sitting next to this man right now? Shout out to all the listeners that stuck with us during this quest of education and deepening practice and fortifying what I have to offer the world. So I'm happy to be back and happy to introduce Will Hardy. How are you?
Man, it's a blessing to be here with you. Yeah, it's been a hell of a journey here the past 4 weeks together. And yeah, don't feel bad about, you know, the hiatus. This one took some time to stew. You just had to stew it a little longer than normal.
Oh yeah, no, we're super rich and concentrated at this point right now. We are in Chiang Mai, Thailand at Suansati, the Garden of Mindfulness. We'll dive into that later, but we're on the last days of a 200-hour yoga teacher training led by this man and his lovely wife, Lisa. This is like, I don't even know, like peak manifestation energy that is your home now. I do want to dive into the yoga teacher training, but I think setting the stage about like who you are and how you came to be and what your journey has been and where did this spiritual path kind of begin for you?
Yeah, big question. Good one to start with. Again, my name is Will. I'm originally from the States, from Washington State. And yeah, I've been abroad for, I guess coming on 14 years now. So I moved out of the States when I was 24. And yeah, wow, what a journey. So I started off here teaching English as a second language. So I was doing that for a couple of years. And that's what got me in my foot in the door here in Asia. And I realized that this was a place where I felt like I could reinvent myself, like I could be free. I could be the person that I always wanted to be. And given that freedom, it took some time to connect to that person that was coming out of this cocoon that had been created over years and years of being kind of boxed in the States. I played basketball in university. I came from a very macho jock culture. And so things like yoga, meditation, spirituality, those were frowned upon to say the least. Mm-hmm. So being here in Thailand, in Asia, it just gave me that space that I never felt that I had. Because in the States, I just felt like I was hustling all the time. You know, it's like there's just a lot, you know. Y'all know. I guess it's been a process, like a gradual process of unfolding into the person who I am now. And it was predicated by being here, being exposed to a more alternative, you know, way of being. Not only with the Thai culture, which is so beautiful, warm, welcoming, relaxed, not so much caught up in the hustle culture of the States. And also the foreign community that we have here in Chiang Mai. So Chiang Mai is an incredibly international city. So I was able to, I was able to get some exposure to different things that I had no exposure to back in the States, you know, yoga, meditation, vegetarianism, you know, Eastern religion, Buddhism, among others. And so this sparked an initial curiosity in me. And that curiosity led me to do my first yoga classes here in Chiang Mai, and then to explore meditation. And I went to my first meditation retreat here in Thailand, and that was about 8 or 9 years ago. So that's how long that I've been actively engaged and seeking out this path, rather than kind of just dancing around the edges. And so about 8 or 9 years ago, I did my first 10-day meditation retreat. There was yoga in there as well. And from that point on, I was hooked. I realized that there was some value here for me in plumbing the depths of who I think that I am, and discovering who I actually am. And so that's just been a part of this unfolding. Is okay. I want there's something more that I want from this life. There's something more that I want to be, and that starts with understanding who actually I am. Mm-hmm. And that's the process of meditation for me, is just getting to intimately know myself on the deepest level.
Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. a beautiful answer. Part of my mission and a lot of my curiosity on this path is rooted in, how do you create a practice from the ground up? Because a lot of the times we're not going to be inspired enough to be consistent with it. It's like, out of good feelings, I'm going to sit in silence. It's like, usually when you follow the stoke, you're going to be out and about and you're going to seek pleasures and whatnot. And I was motivated to my practice by trauma and by sadness and then the curiosity. But then also, once you see the practice working for you, then like the light really like shines on. But what was that process for you? Did you have anything that guided you to practice, or was it a general sense of curiosity?
Yeah, just similar. I was going through a breakup at the time, and that's what inspired, inspired me to find some support in non-traditional ways. So I think a lot of people come to this path through trauma, because if you're just in your normal pleasure-seeking mode, this probably is not going to satisfy that craving.
No.
Yeah. I mean, if you were to ask the average person, like, okay, name, you know, the 10 most pleasurable things that, you know, that you can do, meditation is not going to be on that list for many people. So there's an understanding that there's something more here to this experience than simply craving and then satisfying that craving, you know, desiring something and then fulfilling that sensual desire. And for me, I my first meditation retreat was 10 days. And then from there, I learned some valuable lessons. I gained a bit of space between what happened in my life and then the reaction to it. So it didn't necessarily have to be automatic. Whether it be pain and then aversion to pain, like moving out of that pain, which, you know, again, is something that's a valuable part of our evolutionary systems, or desiring something and then necessarily having to take action towards fulfilling that desire. And so the teaching is, and the experience that I had was, there's something peaceful about sitting and watching that experience arise and fall without going on the journey, without necessarily, you know, getting on the ride every single time that stimulus, you know, is presented. So that's that's kind of how I came to it, was through not getting what I wanted, which was to continue this relationship. And then looking for a way to find some peace, because my identity was shattered. My life was you know, a bit overdramatic now, but it felt like it was in pieces.
Yeah.
And so what's next? How do I pick up the pieces and move forward? And it's something more than just what's the next thing to want, and then, you know, and then go towards fulfilling that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned that you grew up playing sports and you're a part of like jock culture and just didn't resonate. What person were you there? Because I resonate very deeply to that, because I played baseball my whole life and grew up like being friends with all my high school friends, and we're all in the same group text and we're all like talking shit. And like there was a point, actually, like I think reoccurring in that kind of friend group, where like my needs were just never met of deeper inquiry, creativity, expression, and it would always just go back to just like bagging on one another, no deep conversations at all. And it just like, I just got fed up with it. But there was a point where I played along with it, and that was my home for a long time, was being with people that like didn't resonate with me. And I just saw a lot of like walls built up when I wanted proximity and closeness. They were just like, oh, let's just push everything away, because I'm just too cool to deal with emotions or anything like that. But can you reflect upon the person that you were, and maybe some of the areas that remain the teaching, or remains like the stuff that you still have to come back to? Because the old self, like the self-judgment or those types of materials will sprout up kind of like out of the blue. And it's like, oh, wait, like I thought I let go of this a long time ago. But maybe some of the characteristics of Will in Spokane and the things that still come up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just so grateful to this path for turning me inside to investigate, you know, why I am the way that I am. And there were some, you know, past traumas, some childhood wounds that were unaddressed. And of course, in my, you know, in my this basketball culture that I was in, you know, people didn't really talk about that stuff. Didn't really talk about, I mean, we were all messed up. You know, there were so many of us without fathers, or with, you know, just terrible home situations. And you know, the culture was, well, just toughen up. Yeah. Just get over it. You know, be a man. And yeah. And anything.
What is a man?
and then the, you know, that, and that anything seen as being less than the most macho man, that was something that was discouraged, you know, as you well know. So this path that has invited introspection has given me like the wisdom to see that I'm acting out of those childhood wounds that were never truly healed. And for me, that meant my abandonment issues, you know, my father not being in my life since I was about 8 years old. And I was in who I was there was confused in many ways and looking for validation from all the wrong places.
Yep.
and so I did a lot of things that I'm not proud of. You know, I was selling drugs. I was violent, you know, involved with, you know, gangs. And, you know, treated women terribly, treated other people in general. I was just an asshole. But that wasn't, I feel like that's not who I really was. I was just going along with this kind of trope almost of what I thought I needed to be in order to be accepted by this group of people who were, you know, and it's easy to say, you know, those are the bad guys, but you know, I was a part of it too. You know, I participated. I'm not, you know, necessarily only a victim here. I think, you know, I accept the role that I played in, you know, in not only, you know, my own, you know, my own mistakes, but in leading others into I think leading them astray, away from a place of looking inside and trying to find healing for those wounds, instead of just pushing to the side and, just continuing to be these assholes that we were. So, yeah, I, uh, I, I've had the space to reflect on these wounds that I have and how I would just do all these things, which I, you know, didn't agree with at all, with people who weren't healthy for me, because I wanted to be accepted. I wanted to be loved. And I always went to the extreme. And I still have a tendency to do that. So I still see that showing up in my life now. So, you know, it was in high school, guys were selling weed. And I'm like, well, I'm going to sell crack.
Okay. Oh, shit. Extremist.
Yeah. It's like, oh, okay. All right, so y'all getting in fist fights? Well, I got a gun. Now what?
Yeah.
And so that's because I felt like I couldn't just be average. Mm. I couldn't just be, you know, one of the crowd. I needed to be, you know, I needed to do above and beyond what everybody else was doing just to be worthy of that attention and quote unquote love that I was missing. And I didn't know where to get that fulfilled.
Yeah. Wow. Well, good thing you got out of it with no face tats.
Yeah, there was a moment. I mean, I got some bad tats, but not on the face.
Then you'd have been really Wow. Yeah. That's wild. It's amazing just to see, like, how this path has created so much space for everyone, like, no matter from where. Mm-hmm. They arrive, whatever part of their own journey, it's like, it seems like it's just like a big warm hug. Mm. The path of mindfulness, like the path of Buddhism, path of yoga, and all there's a lot of different varieties. You can find it in a lot of different communities and religions and spaces, and not everybody's going to resonate with the same thing, but repeatedly for those who choose the path of mindfulness or self-study and introspection, just the learning and the blossoming that arises from it, it can't be denied because it's a felt experience. It's not just taking someone else's word for it or just being in a scripture or a lesson. It's an embodied experience that we are grateful to experience.
Definitely.
So you've been abroad in Thailand for a number of years as a young man, and did your first yoga class here. What drew you to yoga, and please describe your journey of yoga. What does it mean to you, Will Hardy?
Yeah, well, my first experience of yoga was, like many people, in a fitness studio. And I went there with my ex, and she was and still is incredibly flexible. She was a, you know, ballerina up until about college. And so that was what I thought yoga was how, you know, how bendy are you? And the answer for me was not very. So I felt like I didn't fit into this world because, like, I couldn't do what, you know, my ex could do. I couldn't do what the teacher could do. So it didn't really stick. It just felt like, okay, let me dabble with this because, you know, my ex, you know, my partner's doing this. And then I went back to just lifting weights, which was, you know, what I was doing at the time. So that was my introduction to it. And from there, it faded into the background, and then it came back again after my first meditation retreat where yoga was integrated, and I was so grateful for the yoga after, you know, sitting for so many hours a day. My body was, yeah, feeling it. And so yoga was, you know, was a cool drink of water on a burning hot day, which was my, you know, a burning hot day in hell, which was my experience in the physical body at this meditation retreat. So after that, I connected the dots that, okay, meditation is my practice. That's my home base. And yoga is a place where I can continue that practice just with different postures. Mm. And Buddhism shares that the posture changes. The practice is always the same. So it's slightly different technique between walking meditation and seated meditation, but it's the same. It's the intention is the same, is to be aware of this present moment and whatever it brings with us, with it. So that's what yoga is for me. It's just another chance for me to draw into mindfulness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was like the, did you have similar to the development of the meditation practice, the formal seated practice, did you have a moment in the class or in a class that connected the dots for you as far as the shared intention from seated to asana practice?
Well, in the meditation retreat, there was the option to sit. There were some sessions which were sitting, and then there were some that were walking. And from there, it was an easy connection to make. So it came first from the meditation. Mm-hmm. It was overt in the asana practice at the meditation retreat that, okay, this is to help your body, and also it's a chance to practice in a different position. And this replicates, it's closer to our everyday experience, which is not going to be seated on the mat. You know, the practice, if it's only on the mat, it's still valuable, but the majority of our time is spent off the mat. So how do we introduce mindfulness into those hours when we're not just sitting on the mat? And that's that everyday mindfulness that we try and cultivate, because then it becomes continuous. Mm-hmm. We're trying to experience more moments of mindfulness. And I see every moment of mindfulness as a pearl. And we're trying to string these pearls onto a necklace. Okay? And the more pearls that we can string on, okay, then that's the more beautiful and stronger that our practice is going to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if it's just, you know, if it's just a few minutes in the morning, a few minutes in the evening, this is valuable, it's worthwhile. Mm-hmm. And yet, how can we introduce this into the everyday, like into, you know, the way that we walk to the subway, to the way that we open a door, the way that we brush our teeth, okay, the way that we show up for each other in all different settings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful. I'm trying to get a pearl necklace that's just dragging behind me. Like, don't take my pearls. Yeah, that's great. So at what point did you devote yourself to your asana practice and to want to become a teacher and to share?
After this first meditation retreat I went on, and you know, to round out the story, I did a first meditation retreat, and then from there I went to right away to do a second meditation retreat, and then back again to do a third meditation retreat at the first center. So my entry into meditation was 37 out of 40 days consecutively in meditation retreats or in living in a temple. Mm. And the meditation practice stuck. It wavered here and there. So, you know, I lost it, came back to it, lost it, came back to it. But it was something that was indisputable that it was valuable and something that I wanted to continue. And about a year after that first retreat that I did, I did a 1 month yoga retreat in Guatemala. And at that retreat, it was a reminder to come back to my meditation practice, to make it consistent, and to spend a month in consistent practice twice a day, morning and afternoon, morning dynamic practice, afternoon restorative practice. This was the immersion that I needed to kickstart my yoga journey and then remind me that, okay, this is just another setting in which I can practice mindfulness. And from then, the meditation practice was every day. At that point, I committed. It's like, okay, I've been messing around a bit. I've been, you know, saying that I'm a meditator, and I've been, you know, saying the right words and quoting this religion and that author, but I'm not actually living that. And so I need to bring that into alignment. And this is the inflection point where I can do that. I made that commitment to myself, and then the yoga practice was something that I gained so much benefit from. It just helped me so much in my body. It gave me an outlet for this physicality that I've been missing since, you know, training for college sports. And at that point, there was a lot of turbulence happening in my life, and that was a place where I felt grounded. I made the commitment after about a month or two after that training, or after that that retreat, that I need to do a training. I need to go deeper into this. There's something here for me that I want to explore. And so about 6 months after I dedicated myself to this practice, after this first retreat, I did my first yoga teacher training.
Mm-hmm. Where was that training?
Goa, South Goa in India.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that inflection point of like am I really doing this, is one that I come back to. I feel like this is like the first time that it has actually like happened in my own life where, okay, I'm a daily meditator. Like I did 365 days of meditation, mm-hmm. Facebook group. Like I'm mm-hmm. like walking the walk. And, mm-hmm. and then there's a certain point where there's like a staleness around practice and mm-hmm. you start to piece together community, but it's like, all right, like there's a lot, there's more to this than just mm-hmm. like what it looks like on paper and the peace that I've acquired, even though I'm not holding on to it, but it just, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just like, yeah, like I'm happy. Like yeah. I'm good. Uh-huh. But like, I still go through it, but then it's like, all right, well, like how far does the rabbit hole go? Mm-hmm. And I seem very comfortable at this first turnoff because mm-hmm. I mean, I got everything I need. Like I got like community, I got friends, like I'm doing work that I'm proud of, or at least creatively expressing myself. Like there's still like the issues of, not issues, but just like challenges of romance and finance that are the things that I'm working through and whatnot. But like, how am I spending my time? Like, do I want to become enlightened? Is there a deeper devotion that I can have on this path? Like how, like what am I willing to let go of in order to welcome in the new, and not just remain complacent and just be like, okay, like I feel calm most of the time, like this is good enough or whatnot. And I think that's what brought me here, was just like, okay, like I started my yoga practice and then kind of fell off and did some weightlifting, meditation remained consistent. And then yoga felt like, in the space of yoga falling off and then me like at the top of this year, like wanting to find something outside of just lifting weights. And then yoga came back to me in a major, major way. But after that yoga training, did you see this as like the end goal?
Yeah, I kind of got things, I got the cart before the horse, proverbially. And yeah, I knew that I wanted to start something before I did the training. And I thought, I just need to know a bit more about this discipline. I don't think I'm going to be the lead teacher here, but I had this idea that I want to open a space for other people to receive the benefits that I have received from this practice, from meditation and yoga and permaculture, healthy eating. And so when I went to do the training, it was not thinking that I'm going to be the lead teacher here, but I can perhaps support and at least know a bit more about this discipline so that I can be knowledgeable in the practice that is being shared at the space I wanted to open. So yeah, I went into my training already knowing that this was something that I wanted to do, mm-hmm. is to open a space like this.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Where did you meet your lovely wife, Lisa?
That happened at the training. Yeah, happened at the training.
Oh, really? At that same training?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so give us the rundown, your side of the story, before we go to Red Table Talk.
I was single at the time, and I knew that there might be the possibility to, you know, I mean, I do yoga. There's going to be some ladies there. Let's see if there's any connections. That was not like, you know, on my top 10 list of reasons why I wanted to do a training.
Sure.
But I thought, hey, you know, I'm open to the possibility if it comes. When I got there, it was 30 people in the training. And I thought, I've got to be one of the only guys. And there was like 8 guys.
Oh, dang.
And I was like,
opposite of this one.
Odds just like went, like swung away from me. But I was like, okay, it's still a good number of ladies here. Still a good number.
I mean, you're tall.
I know.
You too.
I mean, my every relationship I've had up until this point has been, it's been like lust has led the way. And then I followed that with trying to fit that person into into a box of what I wanted, I guess. But I made it a point after I had my last breakup, was I want to lead. this relationship, the next relationship I have, I want to be friends with that person first and get to know them outside of the, you know, context of a physical relationship. And so even, you know, even though Lisa and I, you know, we, like when we first met, I wasn't thinking about her in that way. You know, I was just like, okay, I'm going to just keep it cool. Scan the field first, see what's out there. And just like, honestly, just be friends. Just be friends with people first. And so after about a couple weeks, it's 2 weeks, it was our second weekend, we were all hanging out. There was a group of like maybe 10 of us, and I was staying right across from the training center. I had this cool little bungalow, like all natural bamboo, and there was a tree house that we had. There was a tree house right next to my bungalow. And we would go over there and have chai, and we'd have, you know, everyone would come over there and get, just like take a bit of space from the training center. And so we were hanging out on Friday night, and then, you know, people started dropping off, going back to bed. And then eventually it was just her and I, and I mean, I didn't think anything about it. And then, you know, we were hanging out, it's like an hour, got late, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. And I was like, oh, she's still here. I mean, maybe she's feeling me. Am I feeling her? Okay. Let me just, you know, let me try. Okay. I'm going to try it on. And so I went to give her a kiss to say goodnight, and she kissed me back, but then she pulled back and she said, oh, I'm not really here for that. You know, I mean, you're nice, but it's, I don't want any distractions. I was like, okay, cool. We can just chill. Like, it doesn't have to be anything more than friendship. So you know, I thought, okay, just leave it like that. Nothing ventured, nothing lost. Next night, same situation. All hanging out in the treehouse, Saturday night. And then again, we're the last two there. And then we're just talking, and, you know, and then she asked me, she's like, hey, do you know what Bussi means? And she's Austrian, for those that aren't. Pause. She's Austrian. So she said, what does Bussi mean? And I was like, I don't know. And she said, it means kiss. And then she gave me a kiss. I was like, oh, okay, so it's on. It is on. All right, then. Yeah, she had to take a good 24 hours to think on it, but she came to the right decision. But yeah, and then so from that point, like we had this little undercover affair happening during the training. And she would come over to my place and spend the night and then go back to her, you know, to her bungalow in the morning. Before the training started, before the course started in the morning. And, you know, I knew that I had this thing already planned it in Thailand. And so I knew like where I was headed, and she was on this round the world trip with her cousin. So I thought, okay, no pressure. You know, it doesn't have to be anything other than just us hanging out. We don't have to talk about, you know, late, you know, future, none of that. We're just enjoying the moment, knowing that this is a limited, you know, limited time experience. And that's, I think, what helped us to bond so much in the beginning, because there was no pressure. You know, there was like, we're here for 2 weeks, and then after that, you know, you're going this way, I'm going that way, and it was nice to meet you. Yeah. And so I just, we left it like that at the end of the training. And then a couple weeks later, I was in Thailand, and, you know, and then I just sent her a message. I was like, hey, like, what are you doing? Would you consider coming to Thailand? And she said, I thought you would never ask me. and I, you know, but it was part of the allure that there wasn't this, you know, we weren't talking about the future. So I invited her to Thailand. We spent a couple weeks in India and then came back to Thailand. And then from that point on, we were just taking it one visa at a time, not really talking about the future. Her cousin ended up getting homesick and going home. So she was left by herself. And that was actually part of it. If her cousin wanted to travel on, they probably would have gone together. So I think from that point anyways, we were just taking it, you know, 1 month, 2 months at a time, and never, you know, considering the future too much until, I guess, about the end of that year. So it had been about, we did the training in January, and about, and you know, last quarter of that year, we thought, okay, well, you know, let's do this. I want you to stay here with me.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think I'm in the place of maturing into friendship first before anything serious, like genuinely enjoying somebody's company and sharing time with them is like such a prerequisite. Like I'm like seeking ease and comfort and mm-hmm. just like the ability to be seen completely. Mm-hmm. And I've been, I've been lured in by lust and just optics and just like, oh, pretty girl. Oh my God. Let me just like let her treat me like shit just because I don't love myself enough. And like,
we've all been there.
Yeah. I'm just like, all right, like I'm done with all that. And like taking like the slow route, seems very, very, attractive at this point of just like, all right, like I'm relating to myself differently than I ever have. And my friendships are deep and nurturing and illuminating. There's no reason why I should be settling for less in my most important relationship outside of the one with myself. It's like, why am I settling for less in this area when all these other standards are being met? And it's like this area that it's not being met.
Yeah, I mean, you were going to spend so much time with your partner over the years. You know, like that is the number one person that you're going to spend the most time with in your life. You know, you're with your parents until you're about 18 or so. And then, you know, that time together falls off, and your siblings as well. Like, you know, that time falls off. You know, you have your, you know, you spend time with your coworkers, you know, 8 hours a day. Maybe if you're in a, you know, traditional work setting, you know, you spend, you know, nights and some weekends with your friends, but it's your partner that's there for you, you know, more than anybody else in your life. And so if that relationship isn't right, like this relationship not being right, it's going to cause a lot of misery, you know, in your life.
Yeah, for sure. And what a blessing that you guys found each other at that training, but it's like shared interest of like practice and personal accountability and creativity and devotion. And it's like each person, each of you have your own relationship to spirit, to whichever God, self, Brahman, whatever. Like that's a individual relationship that you have, and then you come together, and that being kind of like a center point that each of you have is such a beautiful thing. I think a lot of the times we kind of like stuff dissimilar spirits in a relationship together, and it's just like, all right, well, we don't even like the same things. Like we're not devoted to anything that meet of any worth. And there's a lot of relationships that fall apart. But if you put the practice first, it's like, it's hard not to have any like accountability throughout the whole entire thing. Like I think these days raising your hand and saying, hey, that was my bad, because you're holding yourself to a standard, or you're holding yourself to your practice and you're being earnest with your practice kind of, yeah, it holds you to a standard when you commit yourself to daily practice. So how did Suen Sati come into fruition? Go into it.
Yes, Suen Sati means the garden of mindfulness in Thai.
Oh, we mindful.
Yes, that's the intention of this space. After this yoga retreat that I did, this first yoga retreat that I did, I said, universe, I surrender. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Jesus, take the wheel. and I said, what, like, however you want to use me, because I have tried it my way for so long, trying to control, and, you know, I can't, it's just exhausting for me. Like right now, I know that I have value and that I can be useful, but I don't know which way to go. So I am open. I'm open to whichever way that, you know, that I am to be used, to be useful, in this life. That was after that yoga retreat. And from that point I said, I don't know what this is going to look like, but I want to put service. I want to be of service in this world, and I want to spread loving kindness. I don't know what form that's going to take, but I'm open. First steps I did was I signed up for a yoga teacher training in India. That was at the beginning of the following year, so 6 months later. And then 4 months later, I had scheduled a massage training. I wanted to go learn how to do Thai massage back here in Thailand. I said, those two things are useful, healing people with my hands and then guiding people through this practice, which has healed me. I put that at the forefront. And then when I was here doing the massage training, I was talking with a Thai friend, and we were talking about, well, what do you want your life to look like, or what do you see for the next few years in your life? And we had similar visions. She was really into farming and permaculture, and I shared those interests, but I was also more interested in yoga and meditation. And so she said, well, I don't want to partner with you, like, to do, you know, I'd rather go in a different lane, but I'll support you with all the paperwork, you know, and all the legal stuff that needs to be done if you want to start this up. So I thought, okay, well, I never considered that I could actually start a business in Thailand, and it's got to be hard. It's got to be all these regulations, and I don't have very much money. And, you know, I first thing I did was I was like, okay, let me go talk to a lawyer just to see if this is even possible. Went to talk to a lawyer, and the lawyer said, yep, okay, you can do it. Here's what you have to do. And I thought, okay, well, I can do that. Second thing was, I mean, I don't have any money. Like, I just had a few, you know, $1,000 to my name. So let me reach out to my network and see how much I can beg, borrow, and steal. And I came up with about $40,000, which, looking back, was woefully underfunded. I don't know how that worked. And then the third thing that I needed to find was a place to do this. And my friend that had helped me, you know, with this, my Thai friend, she had a friend who had a piece of land that was just sitting there that they weren't doing anything with. And so they let me rent it for like $180 a month for about 2 acres. Yeah. So I got green lights on those three things. And I thought, well, okay, I asked the universe to use me, and this is the way that I'm supposed to be used. So it's not really my choice. It's just, this is what's unfolding, and there's actions to be taken. And I just took those actions and took those steps, and, you know, step by step, yeah, we built this up to what it is now. And it's, you know, it's a long story, but basically we started off, in this space, and we used volunteers to help build it. Cause I didn't know anything, other than the right people are going to come at the right time. And so we developed a little community of volunteers, of people that were cycling through, mostly foreigners. And we had plumbers come through, and builders, and, you know, and vegan chefs, and, you know, all types of people. And we had this dynamic community that was interested in building this center, which was designed to, you know, bring healing to those who most need it and those who are seeking it. And I wanted to do it at an affordable price. That was also one of my key values here, was this has to be affordable. I don't believe that yoga is only for the wealthy. I want yoga to be available for all. And so we offer our retreats. You know, people tell us all the time they should be more expensive, but they're at a price where I feel like the average traveler here, the average backpacker through Thailand can afford to come. So we did it with volunteers for about 6 months, and we had people who really gave their all to this vision, and I'm forever grateful to them. 6 months in, we opened, and yeah, we went through some ups and downs for the first year or so. And then after that, it just, you know, we started to roll, and we got, you know, more and more popular, and we're at the point now where we pretty much sell out everything that we do.
Wow, what a blessing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a key component of, like, this podcast, me being here for this yoga teacher training, creative expression, authenticity, is, like, finding what we're supposed to be here to do. It's like we live this one time. It's like our duty should be to find the outlet in which we're chosen or supposed to live throughout, and mm-hmm. finding it. If you don't have it, if you haven't found it yet, like, you need to find it by mm-hmm. all means. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how do we get to that point? And I think it's scary as fuck, like, to be like, I'm gonna, like, devote myself, and I'm mm-hmm. gonna ask to be used. Mm-hmm. But that is the surefire way of it mm-hmm. happening. Mm-hmm. And I've walked to that edge and stepped into that mm-hmm. unknown, formless mm-hmm. vastness mm-hmm. of letting go of things and seeing what fills that space. And that letting go was necessary, because the blessing didn't have the space to enter mm-hmm. your life unless you're willing to let go of certain things mm-hmm. and trusting the universe and realizing it is a dynamic relationship. Like I like speak verbatim, like, oh, like I see you like flexing on me right now. Like, especially here when it's like visible 360 panorama, like this is God's country. And every single day I'm like new cloud formations, like just there's dragonflies all over the place. There's a black and white butterfly that just flew across the screen. And there's so many moments here, like to be mindful. It's like, it's just screaming at you. The beauty is just bursting at the seams. And it's just like every moment it's like, and it brings you right back. But it does require that level of trust and just sinking back into it and just knowing that the universe wants to see you happy, wants to see you joyful. But you have to hand over the reins. You have to hand over the control. Mm-hmm. And this world is teaching and propagating that we got to force things. We got to move this to there in order for movement or change or progress to happen. And it's like really like, you don't need to do any of that stuff if it doesn't feel right. And it's not something that's motivated by knowing, clarity, love, connection. If it's not facilitating that, you don't have to move shit. You don't have to do anything unless it's being asked of you. So that's been a huge lesson in the path that I find myself on now. And like the deeper it goes and coming into places like this where it's like, oh, okay, like, there's a clear path to follow in order to embody this wisdom and to practice the wisdom and to see it work for us, because it's an all internal process. It's like at a certain point, the softening brings us into closer proximity to the divine. But it's like once I give up, it just takes over. Mm-hmm. And I think to stand in a manifestation that came from you and your wife and your family, and it's just like, oh, like this, like there is no end, like there is no like cap on what can be brought into this world from stilling the mind and loving the body and being kind and deciding to not just throwing it up like, oh, I'm just going to manifest to me. It's like, no, you put action towards it, but there's a tactfulness that is implemented of just knowing when to exert effort, when to pull back and to allow. But being here has completely changed or impacted my understanding of like what is possible. I've manifested being here. Like that's, for sure. Like I just saw an Instagram post and it said, hey, yoga teacher training online. Shout out to Black Boys at Home. That's like number one, first and foremost. Yeah. But I literally was on Instagram last year, like in the, like during like Christmas or like the holiday season. And it said, hey, we have an online yoga teacher training, 200 hours. And I was like, sounds cool. Like, let me just put in my email and just like, let me just apply for it and just see what happens. And months later, earlier this year, I get an email saying, congratulations, you got accepted for a 200-hour online teacher training. I had just gotten back from Austin from doing my somatic breathwork training. Shout out to Steven Jagers and that whole team. But I just came back from like a very visceral, embodied, compassionate training experience. And it was the first time that I educated myself and put money down and flew out. And like, and I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know like how much I could receive in one, in such a short amount of time. And like, oh, I'm going to change people's lives with this work. So I came back and I got this email saying like online training. I'm like, ah, after I just did this in-person training, I don't know if I want to sit there on an iPad doing asanas and like being in a classroom like after this experience. So I'm like, all right, like I'm still gonna like sign up and do it because I'm grateful that I got it. Like I was like, oh shit, this is like wild. Like it's all coming in right now. 2 days later, I get a I get another email saying, what? From Black Boys Ohm, like, two trainings in 1 week? Like, yeah. Like, here's an experience in Chiang Mai, Thailand, to go to a 200-hour yoga teacher training. Just pay for your flight. And I'm like, what? Are you fucking kidding me right now? I'm like, okay, let me write an email. Like, I responded immediately. I was just like, let me just, like, go in. Uh-huh. Like, let's put the hat on. Let's use our words. Let's make this convincing. And, like, you hit me back. And we got into contact. And I was just like, is this real right now? Like, I don't even know how all of this happened. And it's been on kind of, like, this lead up. And once the email came through and it was like a sure thing, like I let go of like my grip of like control of anything. I was just like, oh, like it's already like working. It doesn't require a whole lot other than the intention that I cultivate within in my seated practice. It's like, I just cultivate truth. Then that's like the guiding principle is like, am I being honest with myself? Am I being honest in this experience? Am I seeing things clearly? Am I accountable to the things that I say and do? And am I helping others? Am I like sharing love with others? Okay, check, 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 check. Trust the intention and the good things will come and arise. And this was a manifestation of years of practice and constantly letting go and letting go and letting go and letting go and to like experience it and to breathe this air, to be here, to meet you, to meet Lisa, the Thai staff, all the beautiful people that are here at this training, like your daughter Willow, like everything. I've just been in love this whole time. Like I'm like, there's not been one day that I haven't just sat and just looked around and just been appreciative, just bathing in gratitude for 27 days, like top to bottom. So thank you.
Oh man.
So much. Oh my God. I'm like, what the hell? Like this is wild.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Mutually beneficial. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm super grateful that you got to come out here and experience this with us and helping us to align with our, you know, with our deeper vision of making yoga accessible.
Most definitely, it's needed, and it's like, I'm going to use this. It's like, it was already on the path as well. It's like, the path was decided, and then this fortifying the skill set that I already have and deepening the practice, because that's what I came here to do. It was like, oh, I'm deepening my devotion to my practice. Like, I'm deepening the promise to myself, deepening what I can bring to other people's lives.
And you definitely have done that. You know, it's been just beautiful to watch that unfolding in you and to watch you move through this training with so much grace and to see this wisdom unfolding, this embodied wisdom unfolding, not only in you, you know, receiving, but in the way that you are showing up and holding space for others as well and encouraging them to continue folding that intention back in and then allowing that light to shine out. So it's been an absolute pleasure to have you here. I know that this is just another feather in your hat. And I already see the way that you hold space for the breath work that you do. So this is just another tool that you have now to share love with other people.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm just so grateful to like, there's like others out here. I'm like doing it. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, have you been to the yoga shala at Suwansati? Tripping. Look at this fucking mountains. I have a couple of more questions left. How has your life changed and what is becoming a father meant to you?
Yeah, it's almost indescribable. I'll try and put it in words, but not having my father around has motivated me to be the best father that I could be. I don't have a model for what that looks like for, you know, how to step into this role. And so I'm just creating it as I go through intuition. And not having a father, maybe in one way I could see it as a blessing, because I don't take this relationship for granted. And I don't think that fathers, you know, that fathers out there that had good home situations do. I'm saying for myself, I am so deeply inspired to be there and to show up and be my best authentic self for my daughter, that it's I don't see any higher purpose in my life than guiding this little human into adolescence and adulthood. I had a powerful LSD trip before she was born, and I set time aside to kind of energetically clear out before she came. And I thought, I need to just have a little reset and introspect and look forwards to who I want to be, how I want to show up for her. And what I found interesting actually was that during that journey, I was called to look backwards actually. And that's been a habit of mine actually, to bury the past instead of allowing it to come up and to let it move through. One, there was a lot of, still residual, trauma around my father not being there, and also some trauma around the whole pandemic that I just had not fully processed. The pandemic was this thing, and then we just kind of like moved forward, and then at some point it was like, back during the pandemic, but I don't think that many of us truly processed it. So I had a kind of abbreviated and intense kind of session that afternoon, which kind of helped me to bring a bit of closure into the pandemic, all the traumas that I experienced during the pandemic, and also the those remaining blind spots that I had in this in the situation with my father not being there. That healing that came into the past allowed me to shed some of those burdens and to show up and to be like, okay, now I'm ready to show up for this human who's coming here in a couple months. So that was, I have to advocate for that in, the right set and setting, is that was helpful for me. Also doing some dedicated talk therapy during the pregnancy was helpful. A few books that I read were also helpful for clearing some space and preparing me for, I was even on YouTube, how to hold a baby. it was a lot for me because I don't have babies in my family. The biggest thing that helped was healing the relationship between my partner, my wife, Lisa, and I. When it's just the two of you, you're like, we don't have to fix this. We're kind of just, we've got these little trigger points, but we just avoid them.
Sure.
And you can be sure that when you have kids, they're going to hit those trigger points. You can't avoid them. And opening that communication line up to say, we really got to get us totally right before we, before we bring another human into the situation. There was a bit of time pressure, artificially created or not, whatever. It did spur us to do that internal work. So I was doing talk therapy, trying to repattern some habits that I had, communication patterns, based on, again, my childhood. And she, to her credit, she also did the same. She did some family constellations. I don't know if you or, your listeners are familiar with family constellations. In a nutshell, it's kind of like acting. So you're in a group, and you are acting as one person in some situation in your life, and then the other people around will, based on your input, Your setup will act as another person in this situation. So it's you, you're acting as you, and then the other person is acting as your parent, the other person is acting as your partner. And so you get to express some of those things that you maybe haven't been able to express in that, you know, in this kind of therapeutic setting. So that's what that is. So she did her work. I'm doing, you know, I did my work, and it's ongoing. As you know, it's like there's never an end to it, because these things are still there. They just don't hold that power anymore as you continue to do the work. So that's having a daughter has pushed me to be the best version of myself and to do that work that I've been putting off, both in myself and for my wife, that she did her work. So I'm couldn't be more grateful for, you know, for this little human being that we created together. And I see my role as a father is just to guide her into adulthood, into, you know, guide her into, you know, her being fulfilled as a human being. And, you know, hopefully somebody that, you know, I not only love, but somebody I like and want to like hang out with.
Yeah. And that she wants to hang out with.
I see her as just like, it's just, she's just the little homie, right? Yeah. And, you know, she just needs a lot of help right now and a lot of love.
Yeah.
And, you know, eventually we're going to be, you know, adults together. And at some point the roles will reverse and she'll be taking care of me. And so I'm just doing the best I can to be a guardian and, you know, and a guide for her.
Yeah. And you, Lisa, and the Thai staff are doing a great job. How, like, this is like a new model for like raising a family. Like, I know a lot of people talk about communal living and just like, all right, like we're gonna have like a lot of different influences and like the support that you guys have here and that you've created as a sustainable lifestyle is like, you should write a book on it, because it's like, oh wow, like granted, you guys are working hard and have like a lot of responsibility to keep this place up and running and leading it and whatnot. But I've seen the in-between time, like Willow and the beautiful staff, Thai staff here, like having their unique relationships blossom and her calling out like Bobo for Pibo and Mon and Orn. It takes a village, and in this instance, this very rare instance, that there is a village.
There's a village.
There is a village. And it's like all the yogis that are here right now, like, I don't know, like 15 to 18 of us, 18, like we're all engaging with her. So Willow gets to experience a lot of different people, and she preserves her autonomy within it all as well, because she's the boss.
Mm-hmm.
Like she knows what she likes and she's just being herself, and there's always something for her to do or to learn or to be engaged with or to rest from and be completely away from, and just to see that the basics are met. And a lot of young kids, especially in America, like their basics are not met by any means, or even in Thailand as well. All over the world, there's children that don't have their needs met, and just to witness and to be a part of a system raising a child is a beautiful thing to witness, and it's something that I wish everybody could see.
I mean, I readily acknowledge that we are incredibly privileged to have this, you know, to have this lifestyle that we have, and it's by design as well.
Yeah.
You know, like it's, we wanted to raise our daughter in a multicultural environment, and so we split time between Austria and Thailand, and you know we visit the States every other year or so, and when we're, you know, she's going to be, you know, multilingual, you know, Thai, English, and German, and I think that richness, especially at this age, is just irreplaceable. There's no other like, this is, I mean, I've tried to give her the childhood that I wish that I would have had, full of love, full of rich experiences, and yeah, full of diversity.
Yes.
And so being here and you know, and we do have an incredible support team. We have, you know, like one of the staff functions as like a nanny. And I know that not everybody has that. And so I do recognize that, acknowledge that we, you know, we have a unique, you know, and privileged, you know, experience here. When we have the space to share as we do, to be with y'all in the Yogashala teaching classes, and you know, whether it's asana classes or classroom sessions, that gives us something back, that gives us fulfillment, and so when we are with her, we're coming from a place of deep fulfillment, and also of, like, you know, grateful that we are both together, and we, you know, take turns. One person gets up early, and, you know, one person's up in the night if need be. So, you know, we're fairly well rested. You know, we're professionally, personally fulfilled. You know, we spend time with each other. Our life is very simple here. So just to give you an overview of what it looks like here. So we're on about 5 acres, and from our house, which is very simple, 2-bedroom, 1-bath, to the Yogashala, it's about a 2-minute walk. to the dining area, it's about a 1-minute walk. Life is just, you know, we have a buffet 3 times a day. We offer the guests. That's also what we eat. So life is just very simplified, and that's my part of my personality too. Is I'm quite minimalist. That just makes things a lot easier for us, is to just keep it simple. And so We're not spending an hour each day, you know, commuting to work. You know, we're spending that time together as a family, and we're fulfilled. We're well rested. We're doing our practice, so we're well regulated, and so that time that we spend together is just so quality. It's just a lot of quality time that we get to spend together with her.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Love, 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 love. One last question. What's your greatest takeaway from this yoga teacher training?
From this particular yoga teacher training course? That's a good one.
Yeah. What did you learn? Or what did you observe?
This course taught me that it doesn't always have to be hard. Mm. Just because it's hard doesn't necessarily mean that it's right. And the converse as well. It's like, just because it's easy doesn't mean that it's right. So all of the previous courses that we've had have had at least some drama. This has been the smoothest course that we've ever had. And I don't know what it is. I can take, the only credit I can take is for designing a schedule that... It's intense, you know, like, you're waking up at 5:30 in the morning, and you might not get to bed until, you know, 9 o'clock at 9:30. We might not be done with the schedule until like 8:30 or 9 o'clock at the latest. So it's a long day, and we try to break it up and give some, you know, spaces here and there for you to rest. But it's a lot. It's 200 hours over the course of four weeks, which is 50-hour work weeks back to back to back to back. So it's a lot, and it's physical, and it's, you know, it's warm here, and, you know, you're living with people, and we're eating together. So it is a lot. I think the resilience of this group, the positive attitudes that everyone has shown up with, the openness that people have shown up with, the willingness to consider new ideas, has taught me that this doesn't always have to be hard. Okay? Mm-hmm. We can also do challenging things with lightness and with ease.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Would you like to guide us in a short meditation before we close?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Yes. Yes.
All right, so come to a comfortable seat. If you feel called to lie down, it's also welcome here in this space. I want you to notice the sounds around you, starting with the sounds that are furthest away from you. could be like here for us, where there are birds in the background, maybe a passing motorcycle. What are the sounds that you can hear that are furthest away from you? And what are those sounds that you can hear that are in the middle ground, a little bit closer, perhaps inside of wherever you are, if you're in a house or an apartment, a building? Yeah, for us, we can hear fish jumping in the pond behind us, some of the workers opening and closing doors. And finally, what are the sounds that are closest to you? Perhaps in the room that you're in? Okay. Perhaps our voices are inside of your headphones. And continuing deeper in, can you hear the sounds that are inside of your body? Perhaps the sound of your breath, heartbeat inside of your chest. This journey that we're on, it's just like this meditation. We're journeying into the center of our being, discovering what's on the inside. Having a deep understanding of who we truly are allows us to shine our brightest as we move through this world. Let's take one more breath together. Deep breath in. Deep breath out. If you'd like to stay in this space, you're invited to stay as long as you'd like. And when the time is right for you, float your eyes back open.
Doesn't get much better than this. For those interested in coming to Chiang Mai, Thailand, spending a few days at Suan Sati, or just reaching out to you and Lisa via the interwebs, where can we direct people?
Our website is suansati.com. That's SUANSATI.com. Same for social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook. We have a YouTube channel, same name, Suan Sati. So that's where you can find us.
Beautiful. Is there any parting message you would like to share with our listeners before we sign off?
One thing that I always share with people is that I always had self-doubts. I questioned whether I was doing the right thing, whether Suan Sati was, it felt aligned, but there's always that voice in the back of your head. And I felt like I'm not ready. I need to do this first. I need to do that first. And so I always say that if you wait until you're ready to do something, you're never going to do it. So right where you are is the perfect place to start. Okay, so don't wait until you're ready. You are good enough to start right exactly where you are.
Thank you, Will. I love you very much.
Love you too, brother.
I love you, Lisa.
My wife is walking by. All right. Word. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for this time, for this space. Thank you to those of you who were listening and present here with us. Your presence is a blessing.
Beautiful. Thank you all for listening to Opening Presence.